exchange. If the exchange form is the standard social structure, its rationality constitutes people what they are for themselves. What they seem to be to themselves is secondary. They are deformed beforehand by the mechanism that has been philosophically transfigured as transcendental. The supposedly most evident of things, the empirical subject, would really have to be viewed as not yet in existence. In this perspective, the transcendental subject is constitutive. This alleged origin of all objects is objectified in rigid timelessness, quite in keeping with Kant's doctrine of the firm and immutable form of transcendental consciousness. Its solidity and invariance, which according to transcendental philosophy brings forth all objects or at least prescribe their rule, are the reflective form of the reification of humans that has been objectively accomplished in the social relationship. The fetish character, a social necessary semblance, has historically turned into the prius of what, according to its concept, would have to be the posterius. The philosophical problems of constitution has reversed into its mirror image, but in this very reversal, it tells the truth about the historic stage that has been reached, in a truth, of course, which a second Copernican turn might theoretically negate again. True, it has its positive aspects as well. Society, as prior, keeps its members and itself alive. The particular individual has the universal to thank for the possibility of his existence, witness thought, which is a general relation and thus a social one. It is not just as fetish that thought takes priority over the individual. Only in idealism one side is hypostasized, the side which is incomprehensible, except in relation to the other. But the datum, the irremovable scandalon of idealism, will demonstrate time and again the failure of the hypostasis. Page 502. It is not the old intentio recta that is restored by insight into the object's primacy, not the trustful bondage to the outside world as it is and as it appears this side of critique, not an anthropological state devoid of the self-consciousness that crystallizes only in the context of re-relating knowledge to the knower. The crude confrontation of subject and object in naive realism is indeed historically necessary and not removable by any act of will. At the same time, it is a product of the wrong abstraction, already a piece of reification. Once we have seen through this, we would be unable without self-reflection to drag further a consciousness objectified to itself, a consciousness externalized precisely as such and virtually recoiling outward. The turn to the subject, though aiming at its primacy from the start, does not simply vanish with its revision. Not the least reason why the revision occurs is the subjective interest of freedom. Rather, by primacy of the object is meant that the subject, for its part, an object in a qualitatively different sense, in a sense more radical than the object, which is not known otherwise than through consciousness, is as an object also a subject. What is known through consciousness must be something. Mediation aims at the mediated, but the subject, the epitome of mediation, is the how, never the what, as opposed to the object, that is postulated by any comprehensible idea of its concept. Potentially, even if not actually, objectivity can be conceived without a subject, not so subjectivity without an object. No matter how we define the subject, some entity cannot be chuckled out of it. It is not something, and something indicates an irreducible objective moment. The subject is nothing at all, even an actus purus. It is still need to refer to something active. The object's primacy is the intentio obliquia of the intentio obliquia, not the warmed over intentio recta. It is the corrective of the subjective reduction, not the denial of the subjective shame. The object too is mediated, but according to its own concept, it is not so thoroughly dependent on the subject as the subject is an objectivity. Idealism has ignored such differences and has thus caused a spiritualization that serves abstraction as a disguise. Yet this occasions a revision of the stand toward the subject which prevails in traditional theory. That theory glorifies the subject in ideology and slanders it in epistemological practice. If one wants to reach the object, on the other hand, its subjective attributes or qualities are not to be eliminated, for precisely that would run counter to the primacy of the object. If the subject does have an objective core, the object's subjective qualities are so much more an element of objectivity. Page 503. For it is only as something definite that the object becomes anything at all. In the attributes that seem to be attached to it by the subject alone, the subject's own objectivity comes to the fore. All of them are borrowed from the objectivity of the intentio recta. Even according to idealist doctrine, the subjective attributes are not mere attachments. They are always called for by the definendum as well, and it is there that the object's primacy is upheld. Conversely, the supposedly pure object lacking any admixture of thought and visuality is the literal reflection of abstract subjectivity. Nothing else but abstraction makes the other like itself. Unlike the undefined substrate of reductionism, the object of undiminished experience is more objective than that substrate. The qualities which the traditional critique of knowledge eliminates from the object and credits to the subject are due in subjective experience to the object's primacy. This is what we were deceived about by the ruling intentio obliquia. Its inheritance went to a critique of experience that realized its historical conditionality and eventually that of society, for society is immanent in experience, not an allogenos. Nothing but the social self-reflection of knowledge obtains for knowledge the objectivity that will escape it as long as it is obeys the social coercions that hold sway in it and does not become aware of them. Social critique is a critique of knowledge and vice versa. Primacy of the object can be discussed legitimately only when that primacy over the subject in the broadest sense of the term is somehow definable. When it is more than the Kantian thing in itself as the unknown cause of the phenomenon. Despite Kant, of course, even the thing in itself bears a minimum of attributes merely by being distinct from the categorically predicted. One such attribute, a negative one, would be that of causality. It suffices to set up an antithesis to the conventional view that conforms with subjectivism. The test of the object's primacy is its qualitative alteration of opinions held by the reified consciousness, opinions that go frictionlessly with subjectivism. Subjectivism does not touch the substance of naive realism. It only seeks to state formal criteria of its validity, as confirmed by the Kantian formula of empirical realism. One argument for primacy of the object is indeed incompatible with Kant's doctrine of constitution, that in modern natural science the ratio peers over the very wall it has built, that it grabs a snippet of what differs with its well-honed categories. Such broadening of the ratio shatters subjectivism. But what defines the prior object as distinct from its subjective trappings is comprehensible in the conditionality of what conditions it in that which in turn defines the categorical apparatus it is to be defined by, according to the subjectivist pattern. Page 504. The categorical attributes, without which there is no objectivity as yet, according to Kant, are posited also, and thus, if you will, they are really merely subjective. The reductio ad hominem thus becomes the downfall of anthropocentrism, that even man as constituents is man-made. This disenchants the creativity of the mind, but since primacy of the object requires reflection on the subject in subjective reflection, subjectivity as distinct from primitive materialism, which really does not permit dialectics, becomes a moment that lasts. Ever since the Copernican turn, what goes by the name of phenomenalism, that nothing is known save by a knowing subject, has joined with the cult of the mind. Insight into the primacy of the object revolutionizes both. What Hegel intended to place within subjective brackets has the critical consequence of shattering them. The general assurance that innovations, insights, cognitions are merely subjective ceases to convince as soon as subjectivity is grasped as the object's form. Phenomenality is the subject's magical transformation into the ground of its own definition, its positing as true being. The subject itself is to be brought to objectivity. Its stirrings are not to be banished from cognition. But the illusions of phenomenalism is a necessary one. It attests to the all but irresistibly blinding context which the subject produces as a false consciousness, and whose members it is at the same time. Such irresistibility is the foundation of the ideology of the subject. Awareness of a defect, of the limits of knowledge, becomes a virtue, so as to make the defect more bearable. A collective narcissism was at work, but it could not have prevailed with such stringency, could not have brought forth the most potent philosophies, if the fundament had not contained a kernel, albeit a distorted one, of truth. What transcendentalism praised in creative subjectivity is the subject's unconscious imprisonment in itself. Its every object through leaves the subject harnessed like an armored beast in the shell it tries in vain to shed. The only difference is that so much animals it did not occur to brag of their captivity as freedom. We may well ask why human beings did so. Their mental imprisonment is exceedingly real. That as cognitive beings they depend on space, on time, on thought forms, marks their dependence on the species. Those constituents where its precipitation, they are no less valid for that reason, as a priori and society are intertwined. Page 505. The universality and necessity of those forms, their Kantian glory, is none other than that which unites mankind. It needed them to survive. Captivity was internalized. The individual is no less imprisoned in himself than in the universal, in society. Hence the interest in the reinterpretation of captivity as freedom. The categorical captivity of individual consciousness repeats the real captivity of every individual. The very cleanse that allows consciousness to see through that captivity is determined by the forms it has implanted in the individual. Their imprisonment in themselves might make people realize their social imprisonment. Preventing this realization was in its capital interest of the status quo.